Welcome, guys. Thanks so much for joining me today. So, for the recording, this is a lesson on the imposter syndrome. My name is Rowan Shrum, and I just want to welcome everybody today. So, we're going to dive right into this topic of the imposter syndrome. I say that, but first, I want to briefly introduce myself so that you know who you're dealing with here. So, my husband and I, we are part of Dove. We've been a part of Dove. My husband grew up in the Dove Elizabethtown Church, and we've been missionaries to Germany for the last 12 years. We started an organization called the Justice Project. We work to identify and assist victims of human trafficking and also women that are working, they're stuck in poverty-driven prostitution. So that's the work that we've been doing for the last 12 years. I did bring some flyers in the back. If you want to grab one on your way out, you can also sign up for our newsletter and yeah, just stay in touch about the work that we're doing there. This is a picture of my family. My husband's holding down the fort. We've got three kids. Two of them were born in Germany. My oldest was born in the United States. So we've been, yeah, we're fully integrated in there. They correct my German all the time. So they're they're thriving in that. They love to do that to me, too. So, yeah, so when we talk about the imposter syndrome, one thing I like to highlight that it does, statistically, it does affect women more than it does men, but the fact is that men deal with imposter syndrome as well. So I figured in preparation and in talking about this, I just wanted to share some of my personal story on this topic so that we can unpack the imposter syndrome together. And I mentioned earlier, if you wanted to take photos of the slides to help you follow along, I'll try to remember to indicate for the audio when a next slide is going. And if you want the slides with the audio later, just give me your email address on the back table. I'm happy to send it to you. So, by definition, the imposter syndrome describes feelings of severe inadequacy and self-doubt that can leave people fearing that they will be exposed as a fraud. And this is usually in the context of their work lives. So despite any success or accomplishment in your life, you might find yourself having these chronic feelings of incompetence. And there can be this belief that sheer luck or some kind of accident actually got you to the place where you are. So for me, when I heard that this was actually a thing and that someone had given a name to it, a name to the feelings that I had experienced so many times in my life, just knowing that was already a lightning in my heart that, oh my goodness, this is actually a real thing. People deal with this. And I mentioned this topic in passing to the Dove European leadership team, but then suddenly, we'll go to the next slide. I was asked to share more about it. Hey, Rowan, we'd love for you to teach about the imposter syndrome. Could you do it? And I found myself saying yes and simultaneously triggering the very thing that I was supposed to teach about. So this was the moment for me where I went, what have I done? What have I done? Because the reality was that the brief description that I had already given them was pretty much the extent of my knowledge on it. So this was, in fact, the first test in my newfound freedom. And it was really in this moment that I knew I did not know enough about the imposter syndrome to teach it, but I also knew that I wanted to dig deeper into it, and this was going to force me to do it. So to educate myself on the topic, I got a book. It's called The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women by Valerie Young. And she makes this dedication in her book to these two doctors who co-discovered the imposter syndrome. And in her dedication, she says this: by putting a name to the feelings, they have helped free countless people, including myself, from needless self-doubt. So I learned about this book from an online class that I was taking. It was a class sponsored by Yale, and it was on women in leadership. And in fact, I was taking this class because we had been awarded a grant from the European Commission to lead this two-year project. It was an international project with four other organizations who do anti-trafficking work in Europe, and getting the approval for this project was really going to open doors for us on an international level that we didn't have before. So not only was it getting us known on an international level, it was going to give us opportunities to meet with policymakers in the EU to advocate for victims of human trafficking in a really significant way. So in writing the proposal, I actually put myself into the position of the lead manager role. And when we got the incredible news that the grant we wrote was approved, next slide, this happened to me. a strange sort of panic set in, and I was flooded with doubt and insecurity, and it really started to overwhelm me. It's this feeling of like, what have I just committed to? I am not qualified for this. It completely came over me. And I, you know, at this point, I really didn't have any experience in leading these EU projects, and all of the other organizations that we were partnering with, they had years of experience under their belt. So I had this impending fear that when I started to lead this thing, I was going to be exposed as a fraud, as an imposter. They were going to ask me questions because I'm supposed to know, and I wasn't going to have the answer. And so here I was sitting here. We were 10 years into building the Justice Project. Forget about 2 counseling centers, a safe house full of trafficking survivors, 15 paid staff on our team. None of those accomplishments mattered. This international project had me doubting myself on a whole new level. So in an attempt to do something, I signed up for this Women in Leadership class, and that's when my eyes were opened. So it was a 6-week course, and the caliber of the women when I was researching who signs up for classes like this, it ranged from startup entrepreneurs to executive CEOs of major companies. And I was already intimidated by that fact, and I really wanted to do well in the class. So they would send us assignments, and we'd turn them in. And after a while, we'd get our assignments back, and they'd send us the grades and charts of how we compared to the other people in the class. And I was actually shocked because my scores were consistently at 100%, while the class average was below 80%. So when they touched on this topic of the imposter syndrome in one of the lessons, something really clicked, and I was able to identify that familiar feeling. See, even though I maintained a really high level of success in the class, I realized that I was driven to do well by this underlying anxiety that I had to work harder than everyone else just to keep up. So getting that 100% was just an outworking of this anxiety that was fueling me. It fueled my behavior. And this was really one indicator that I was wrestling with the imposter syndrome. So I started to journey deeper into this feeling. And for me, there was absolutely no question that I was wrestling with it. And I started asking myself, what other times in my life did I have this feeling like I was an imposter? And really, probably more importantly, was there any legitimacy to those feelings? So my journey took me way back to an early childhood memory that I'd like to share with you, one that I call the real imposter. This is me around 1985, and somewhere in the mid-1980s, a little girl who cut her own bangs that year told a little lie that started it all. I was a junior Girl Scout, and I was at a convention where they had hundreds of other junior Girl Scouts in attendance. And they were giving each of us a raffle ticket for prizes that they'd been giving away throughout the day. And it was toward the end of the day, and I still hadn't gotten a prize. And they called a number. It was something like what you see on the screen, 52736. Nobody raised their hand. So they called the number again. And in my 7-year-old mind, I decided that because the number 27 was also in the number that was on my ticket, I was going to raise my hand and claim the prize. So I did that, and as I started walking down the long hall to collect my flower crown, this terrifying fear came over me because I remembered that I had just shown all the little girls around me my ticket number, and they knew that I did not have the winning ticket. Ha. That feeling of being exposed as an imposter was all over me. And the reality was, in that moment, I indeed was an imposter. This memory has stuck with me today. So I submit this to you in the journey of calling out the imposter syndrome in your own life is to really ask yourself the question, how real is this? Is that nagging feeling that you have due to something that you're doing that you shouldn't be? Is the Holy Spirit convicting you of something that needs to be dealt with or changed? If the answer is yes, then own it. Confront yourself, repent, make the necessary changes, and get ready to move forward. This next memory that I'd like to share with you in my next slide is one that I like to call the unintentional imposter. This is me in 1995, and I think I just discovered hairspray. Some of us can remember way back then. And my theater arts teacher, she had taken us to a state competition for acting and singing, and she wanted me to compete. So I was going to sign up for the musical theater category. And at the time of the signups, they had two tracks, one for beginners and one for advanced singers. So I did not feel super confident in my abilities to sing, but I wanted to participate. So I thought, I'll just sign up for the novice beginners track. We'll all just come together and it's going to be fine. And when we got there, we found out that there was no beginners category. They were putting everybody together with the advanced singers. I started getting a little terrified at this point, but I just thought to myself, oh, okay, I'll give it a shot in the first round. I'll see how it goes. So I didn't feel super confident, but the reality was for me in that time, it wasn't a matter of like if I was going to get found out. It was a matter of when, because you can fake it till you make it for a lot of things in life. But if you're going to stand up on a stage at a singing competition and try to be like number one, you really can't. You can't hide around that. So I was like, okay, I kind of knew I was getting a little bit out of my lane, but I said, I'm just going to give it a try. So I walked in the first round, put my little cassette tape in, and got up on stage. I started singing and I just started fumbling through the words. I mean, it was just horrible. The experience was not enjoyable. There wasn't that many people in the room, so it wasn't like too embarrassing. Fumbled through, finished, and I left. And I just said, you know what? I gave it a shot. I tried. This is clearly not for me. But my theater teacher found me in the hallway and I said to her, I think I'm just going to bow out of the rest of the competition. And she said something to me. She said, Rowan, it's not about the outcome. It's about the experience. I really want you to do this. Go to the second round. Step out of your comfort zone and just go for this. See what your abilities can do. So I was like, okay, fine. I went into the second round. The room was much bigger and it was much fuller. It was like people came to watch. So the first name was called. We're all sitting there and this is me. Okay, sitting there. This name gets called, and this is the woman who stands. Okay, so this is not literally exactly the woman, but this in my memory, this is what she looked like. She literally, she did have a live pianist, and she was wearing a long black flowy dress. She was carrying a single red rose in her hand, and when she began to sing, it was the most beautiful presentation of the Pirates of Penzance that I had ever heard. And I was like, this girl is incredible. She's high school level. And immediately I thought to myself, there is no way that I'm going to follow that. So when everybody claps, I'm just going to grab my things and I'm just going to head out the door. This was my plan. So applause starts. Everyone's super impressed. I grab my things. I stand up. And it was like in that moment as I was standing, my name gets called. I'm already standing, and normally the sweetest sound to a person's name to a person's ear is their name. But in that moment, the sound of my name being called was absolutely terrifying. And I thought to myself, they're all looking at me. I can't walk out the door. So I said, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, let's just go big. So I went up. I got up on the stage. I put my cassette tape in where that pianist had been sitting. I pushed play. And I just tried to sing my heart out. And it just was not good. It was not good. I'm going to be honest. It was mediocre at best. And I remember just trying to think in my mind, where's a good spot that I can just lower the music slowly. And I walked over and I said, oh, the pianist repeated here and she wasn't supposed to. So I just slowly like faded out as if that was the end of my performance, grabbed my things. I didn't even wait. I just left. I left. So that was like my big experience in, you know, recognizing that that was not for me. And in that moment, I was an unintentional imposter. I will tell you the redemptive side of the story. The next year, I did sign up for theater arts, and a friend of mine and I did a duet competition. We won first place. We got sent to nationals in Nebraska, and we won first at the national level. So I recognize, okay, acting I can do. Let's just leave the singing to somebody else. So the unintentional imposter, I call this that because that was the reality. I was trying to stretch myself, but the situation got beyond me. So maybe there's a situation in your life that's contributed to this feeling, and maybe you really didn't have the talent to get to where you needed to be, and maybe it was unintentional. So when you identify that you don't have those qualifications, the key is that to recognize the difference. In a situation where you really are qualified, the facts don't lie. The results show it. If your abilities are evident to everyone around you, then you have to learn how to give yourself the credit you deserve. Otherwise, learn from your experience and reset your efforts to where your talents really lie, and let that be okay. I think I see this a lot, like when we were watching American Idol when it first came out, and you saw those auditions that were just horrible, and they had like family members telling them, they're so great, you can do this, you're so good. So, you know, sometimes we do need other people to speak into our lives on the reality of those things. But I think for a lot of us, you can actually really concretely recognize, do I have this capability or not? And if you're not sure, the results will show it. So now we're going to move on to what I call the genuine imposter. So this is that thing that I felt when we got awarded that lead management project from the EU. And what I'm saying is that in identifying the imposter syndrome, you really have to look at the difference. So the feelings are the same. You still feel overwhelmed. You feel insecure. But you actually have a track record of success that qualifies you. And even if you know that there are things that you aren't going to know in the process, you have the ability to learn. You have the ability to find the answers that you're going to need. And that was the reality for me of being awarded the lead manager position in this EU project. I actually had the years of experience behind me. And in taking that women in leadership class, evaluating my scores and recognizing that I could keep up with everybody else, I actually was competent. Despite this discovery, I knew that the real test would come over time. And so I would say identifying the real deficiencies as you're in your process is going to be the key in evaluating the legitimacy of the feelings of self-doubt. Next, I just want to look, I want to highlight some things to look for from Valerie's book. Things to look for. So non-imposters, people who don't struggle with this, those that work hard, they do so because it's what's required of them to get the job done. And when their diligence pays off, it enhances their confidence. But for someone wrestling with imposter syndrome, when your work pays off, you mostly feel relief. This was such a place of identification for me. Because after everything I would do, after every speaking engagement, after every situation that I was confronted with, I would just feel immense relief. Because your efforts are motivated by this underlining sense of phoniness. And any good feelings that you have following success are short-lived. This is something that if you say, that's me, the imposter syndrome is something you're wrestling with. Being a workaholic protects you, actually. It contributes to your success. But so when you stay later, you study harder, or you practice longer than people around you, you obviously have a greater chance of doing well. This was true for me. So in that regard, diligence does work. However, the anxiety that fuels your behavior remains untouched. Next thing I want to look at in identifying the imposter syndrome. Despite the success, the glow of success wears off quickly. Because even with the compliments that come, deep down, you really don't believe the positive things that people say about you. And the success then only intensifies this fear of being discovered. And this is where I like to bring the Lord into it. Oh, but God. Because as believers, you know, we don't want to rule out the hand of God in our lives. And when I took a closer look at my list of achievements, I really saw a lot of times where the Lord came through and the Lord really like met the deficiencies that were there. And one thing I want to point out about that is that there's a danger that when we experience God's hand moving on our behalf, it may start to legitimize these feelings of inadequacy that we couldn't do these things on our own. But when God does move on your behalf, it does not disqualify you. That is, you know, a lot of us are underqualified for what God has called us to do, and we need the Lord to move on our behalf. And I like to think about the wedding at Cana. And we hear a lot about the miracle itself of Jesus turning the water into wine. But I put myself in that administrator's situation, the administrative deficiency of not having enough wine at a wedding back then was, you know, it was just humiliating. So we see Jesus come through and he actually met the deficiency and really in a powerful way. So having the Lord come through with a miracle does not disqualify us from taking on bigger tasks. And actually the Lord will meet our shortcomings. And in situations where he came through when something should have been done that wasn't, we can learn from those situations. When we moved to Germany 12 years ago, we did not plan on building this organization. We didn't plan to be employers and be responsible for people's paychecks. When we we had some experience in business before moving to Germany, but in America, you can start a company overnight. So the point being, we were highly unqualified to do the task at hand. And we did not know beforehand that all this education and all these questions about what qualifies you to do this thing was actually going to be presented to us. So I was really able to identify with Paul in this next verse, this verse I want to show you, 1 Corinthians 1:27 to 29. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. This was so true in our case. God did not call the qualified. He qualified the called. So I can look at the last 12 years and really say, to God be the glory, because he really did guide us to go where, to get to where we are today. But along the way, we learned, we stopped, we paid attention, we made adjustments. And it brought us to a point of leadership where I should not go into full-blown panic mode at the thought of leading a project. So in practically speaking, I want to talk about now what else we can do when we don't know what to do. In creative arenas, competence and success, when you're standing on a stage, they're gauged by things like you get the role, you get the part, you get a contract cut, you get that recognition. In business, competence and success is essentially measured by your ability to make things happen in order to generate a profit. But with imposter syndrome, the problem isn't that you deny the existence of the success in your life, but that you're compelled to explain your success away with qualifiers. So some practical things that we can do in exposing it, we talk about exposing it, calling it out, and throwing it out. And here's a few points that I want to share with you. Number one, create a list of all your past achievements, large and small. This is a very practical way to put imposter syndrome in its place. First, just make a list, just of the facts. No qualifiers. And when you start to take a look, when you leave out those qualifiers, you will start to get a different perspective on who you are and the accomplishments that you've had. Second point, next to each achievement, note the role that the hand of God or timing or connections or your own charisma even played into the ultimate success. Number three, write down the specific actions that you took to take full advantage of these contributors. These were some good points that helped me as I walked through it from Valerie's book. But in praying and just asking the Lord to dig deeper into this, there were some further insights that the Lord gave me that I want to share with you. And I would just say, when facing your next challenge, really invite Jesus to come into the process. Let him speak into it from his perspective. And number one, I just say, identify what deficiencies really do exist. Really be real with yourself. In that first EU project meeting that I held, I was fully aware that I was underqualified to be doing what I was doing. But instead of bowing out during that first meeting when I introduced myself, I just told them, hey, this is my first time leading an EU project. I'm going to really try to answer all of your questions. And if I don't know the answer, I'm going to find it for you. And it just dissolved this feeling and this pressure to perform in a way that made it okay. It leveled the playing field and it let them know, I don't think I know what I'm doing. And it gave me that freedom and that space to just operate. So this was a step for me that I was able to take just from processing where I was actually at. Second point is to brainstorm solutions to overcome the real gaps that exist. And this is why I said I don't feel equipped, and I decided to take that class, that online class, and it really educated me and it equipped me. And this was just a very simple solution after a little bit of a brainstorm to meet that deficiency. Number three, invite a trusted mentor to help you examine the situation. And this is where I would say, you know, when you bring people into your life, take the opportunity to invite them to evaluate you. Trusted people in your life that will be real with you. So back to my American Idol example, if you got people in your life that are your biggest cheerleaders and they're never going to say anything, you know, critical about you, that's not going to be helpful for you. Go to a trusted leader in your church and say, hey, this is the big idea that I want to do. Do you see qualities in me that you think I can pull this off? Next point, I would just say talk to peers in your field and get feedback. get feedback from them on their experiences. Ask them, how did you work through these things? Knowing what we know now about imposter syndrome and that 70% of the population has experienced feelings about it, if you go and talk to somebody who's experienced in that field, ask them, how did you deal with that? And let that, you know, let that be a conversation piece. So going forward in our individual journey in overcoming the imposter syndrome, we're not going to be able to avoid the feelings of self-doubt entirely. I still, to this day, when they asked me to redo this session because of the recording, I was like immediately thrown into like a whirlwind of like anxiety and panic. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to do it. We're just going to do it scared. This is the thing. It's like the mantra now that's coming. If you're scared to do something, just do it scared. So you push through those feelings, you push through those emotions. But the fact is that they're going to come. And the question is, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with those emotions? And so I had to practice what I was preaching. And I said, okay, yes, I'll do it. And then I'm going to head out to the airport like right after this session. Because I have a flight, not because I'm scared anymore. But because I actually really do have a flight. So so I want to leave you with this last image. And this is if you're ever in a situation where you start to feel like this, and for the audio, if you don't have the slides, it's a circle. It's a big circle that represents what I think other people know. And there's a smaller circle that says what I know. This is the impression that we have about ourselves. We think we know very little about something and that other people know so much more. But the reality looks more like this. Two equal circles representing what I know and what other people know. And it's just this is the reality in a lot of situations. So that's pretty much the end of my presentation. But for your viewing pleasure, I have included a picture of myself at an EU meeting. This is during the question and answer time where I forced myself to stand up during question and answer and say something. This picture makes it look like I'm saying something really great. In actual fact, I'm asking them to put the slide back one so that I could take a picture of it because it had an email address that I wanted. So I forced myself to do this, and one of the project partners was watching this online, and she snapped this. She screenshotted this for me, but I said, I'm going to carry this picture with me. Whoever sees that thinks I'm just like, I know what I'm talking about. Look how confident I am. They don't know that when I stood up and grabbed that microphone, the feedback was like too loud and the whole thing happened. And I was like, can you just go back one slide? And so let this be an encouragement. Let this be an encouragement to you. I like to say bravery is overcoming your inner coward. That's really all it is. People don't know you're scared. Just do it scared. And in this last photo, this is, I was saying about the EU contracts that we got really opened doors for us and in supernatural ways to connect with EU policymakers and different things. So this is a picture at one of those meetings. And just to show you, this was the terrifying. So pimps, traffickers, I can handle that. But flags and suits are probably one of the most terrifying things to me. And this is a picture representing that for your viewing pleasure today. That is the conclusion of my message on the imposter syndrome. And I just really want to thank you guys for taking the time. I'll open it up for questions. Does anybody have any questions that they'd like to ask for the microphone? Is anyone too scared? Too scared to ask? Too scared? Yes, I can go back to that slide. Thank you. That is perfect. She overcame her fear and asked me to go back one slide. I'm going to be here for just a few minutes. I probably stay for about 15 minutes afterward. If somebody wants to talk or has any questions, I'm happy to stick around. I kind of sped through this today. It's only 2:30, so we've got time. You can officially end this recording. I was supposed to say that sooner. So, but does anyone have any questions? I don't want to cut anybody off. This one right here? Yeah, go for it. Oh, this one. Yes, okay. Yep. Snap away. Yes. Oh, yes, yes.
So I hear what you're saying. Are you saying that you've come through or you're still, is it still something that I have to deal with the rest of my life?
Yes. So she said, She said, is this something that you're going to have to deal with the rest of your life? So, you know, so I'm 43 years old and I have just discovered the imposter syndrome. I don't know how much of the terrifying feeling that I have is just habit, or how much of it is, and I was talking to Mary Prokopchik about this. She's like, for her, she experiences it too. And they go and speak and do marriage seminars all the time. So in a way it's a grounding. It is a good way to keep you grounded. I think how we perceive it or what we do with it is where now the value lies. I don't think that feeling's ever going to stop. I don't think, you know, even like standing up and like talking about this session was like super terrifying for me. And I've done, you know, I've spoken in front of people for years. So I don't think that feeling's ever going to go away, but what you do with it and not letting it paralyze you or prevent you from taking on that which God has called you to do. So when you, you know, for me now, having led a 2-year EU project, I am so much more confident in my ability to do that again. Might I be terrified in this EU setting with flags and suits? Yes. But knowing that I am qualified because I went through these steps and I asked myself, do I actually know what I'm doing? No. So what am I going to do to equip myself? And then doing those things, you are qualified. You are able to do it. Or no, you can't do it. Don't do it. You know, do something else that you can do. So I think the whole point of this thing, you can pray, you can ask the Lord, but I think the reality is human nature. If you get anxious in those situations, that feeling is gonna come. And they do, they talk about in this class that I took, breathing exercises to help calm yourself down. I mean, my heart's racing a mile a minute when I'm about to get up on that stage and give my little elevator pitch, to the point where I'm like, what is happening to me? So there's breathing exercises that you can do to slow your heart rate down, to get control back, you know, over the situation emotionally. They talk about, in that class, they talked about emotional intelligence. And this is something you can Google and even find information about. Emotional intelligence, assessing a situation where you're starting to get overly panicked, stopping, doing these deep breathing exercises, slowing yourself down, and then taking that step forward. So yes, you will never stop having, no, I'm just kidding. So, so to answer your question, yeah. So I really, that's been my experience. And I will say, like, having to do this a second day, I wasn't as anxious. It wasn't as, yeah. And I think if I were doing this more and more, if this was like my thing that I did, I probably wouldn't be as anxious. But when I'm only just doing it like here and there every once in a while, that I think lends itself to the situation. Does that answer your question? Okay. Jesus, help us. And we will pray before we leave today. Another question? Yes.
So how do you keep the faith, check the confidence?
Well, as far as so the question was like, how do we keep the faith in like knowing that we're supposed to be doing that thing?
Like the scripture you shared.
Yes, in 1 Corinthians.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, look, when we talk about, I feel like in our culture and in our society, the one thing we really do have going for us as Americans, and as, you know, even in the Americans in the church, we have a willingness to step out and take risk, to do things for the Lord in a way that maybe in other cultures would not be a normal thing. And so, you know, I claim this verse because I've seen the hand of God come through when we needed it. I've seen the Lord move in a way that confirmed what it was we were supposed to be doing. So even though I may have felt along the way, it did not help me become qualified or confirm my qualification immediately. It was a series of events where actually in our field, I said, Lord, we need you to do this supernaturally. We need you to confirm what we're doing. We need it to be a sign and a wonder, not just to the world, but to us. So, you know, this verse is like, it's claiming it, but then you really do need to experience it. We said 5 years, we'd go to Germany for 5 years. And if there was nothing to confound the wise coming out of it, after 5 years, if we were just foolish and nothing happened, we were going to go home. And that wasn't going to shatter my faith. That was going to be a reality check for me. So I said, Lord, 5 years. If there's nothing to show for this work, then let's find out what I am supposed to be doing. And for us, we were in line with what the Lord wanted. The grace was there. The fruit was there. The work established itself, and it was a confirmation. And that is how I can claim this verse. And if it doesn't work out, you don't lose the faith. You just say, okay, that wasn't it. I missed it. That's okay. What am I supposed to do? And really allow the Lord then to lead you. And I feel like, you know, when we take these steps, getting trusted mentors into our lives, having people that are accountable, that know us, to walk through these things with us, they can also speak into those situations in a way that we sometimes can't come to those conclusions ourselves. So I would just encourage you with that. Really just ask the Lord then, if this is not what I'm supposed to be doing, what am I supposed to be doing? And do not let that stop you from taking the next risk. Life's too short and you don't want to live bored. So if you're going to live bored or scared, live scared. You know what I mean? You'll find your place. Just keep stepping out. Yeah.